Now, your host, Michael Cohen, with a Capital City Recap on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.
Michael Cohen here with producer Desi Simmons. So other than the earthquake, the eyes of the world are on Libya, where all indications are that the Gaddafi regime is well on its way to being toppled by rebels. Watching the developments intently are 19 Libyan nationals in East Lansing, who at the moment are stuck in limbo, not allowed to stay in the U.S., yet unable to return home. To talk about their experience, I'm joined by Mohammed Jabril. He is a spokesman for the former Libyan international students that were enrolled at Michigan State University until earlier this summer. Welcome to the program, Mohammed.
Hi.
Now, while the Gaddafi regime was known to be extremely brutal, what are your thoughts on the results of rebels taking over the country? Are you worried about the likely instability that will now follow?
Well, according to the prime minister, the new prime minister, he said that the easy part is taking Gaddafi down, but now the hard part would be rebuilding the country, because Gaddafi is leaving the country literally in like ruins. The economy is destroyed. We don't have any infrastructure. We have the worst infrastructure in North Africa, worst healthcare in North Africa, worst education in North Africa. So we're starting basically from scratch. So we think it's problematic and it will take time. So the country will take, you know, some time to stabilize.
Now, Mohammed, do you have your radio on right now?
No.
Okay. Now, the funding that brought you and your fellow students to East Lansing, that was provided by the Gaddafi regime. With that being the case, what kind of loyalty did you and your fellow students have to his government?
Well, basically, in Libya, you are brought up in an environment of fear. You don't know if someone's going to report you if you said anything. So even when I sit with my colleagues now, whom I speak openly about the regime and how horrible he is, prior to this, I wouldn't dare to speak in front of them about it. In Libya, we have a system of security where they would recruit people to go out the country and report Libyans outside the country. And if you do anything like that, you will be on your arrival back to Libya, you will be captured by the police, and you know you never know what might happen to you after that. Gaddafi repeatedly said anyone opposing the government should be liquidated. And actually, it is in the Libyan law. If you criticize the Libyan government or what he calls the people's system, you get executed. It's Article 70 and Article 71 of the Libyan law.
Let me ask you then, when you look ahead at what's going to be happening here in Libya in the next months and years, what do you really expect to see occurring in your country?
What I want to see, I can't expect anything because I don't know. I don't have much information about what's happening on the ground. But what I want to see is like what you have. I want to be able to speak my mind without fearing that I will be detained or killed. I want to protest things that I don't like. I want to just be able to think, you know, without fearing that my thinking could be negative. It could be against me. I'm not allowed to think about such things. I want my children to have, you know, to have a life.
And these rebels, the folks that are now essentially taking over the Gaddafi compounds and taking control, who exactly are these people?
They are everybody. I mean, two of my brothers are in the Libya, what you call rebel forces. We call them just, you know, revolutionaries because, you know, they're just fighting for it.
And do you think the likelihood of a democracy in any sense of the type that we have here really has a chance of succeeding initially in Libya?
Well, I don't know exactly because many people have joined the fight, and now everybody in Libya has a gun. I mean, it's not basically an army now. Everybody, almost everybody, is equipped. So nobody would allow anybody to take the power and just, you know, start another dictatorship. So what I fear that we might have those people who want to take over everything and, you know, run the country their way, and then we might have problems.
I see. I mean, it sounds like it's a ripe situation for either anarchy or even a potential civil war here.
It is still possible. And even the chairman of the National Transitional Council warned the people about that. He said, now we should stick together and we should work together to create a country of democracy and human rights, a country where everybody is equal. And that's what everybody wants. But as I told you, like, this is what, you know, we speak about in public. I don't know what happens in private.
And the Gaddafi regime, are you convinced that they are definitely not, they don't have a chance of coming back?
they don't have a chance of going back. But what I fear is that they will punish the country for not allowing them to stay in the country. So, like today, or was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday. They launched three Scud missiles on other cities from Sirte. They launched three Scud missiles, and it was intercepted by NATO. So what he's trying to do is just destroy whatever he can destroy as a revenge, which is scary, because we know that he had at least and still has some weapons of mass destruction and chemical weapons.
I see. Although he wouldn't use that on his own people now, would he?
He would. Actually, he tried to, but he failed. But he would.
I want to talk about your situation, the one that you face, and the other Libyan nationals now in East Lansing who were in this MSU program. I know the funding for the training program has long been cut off, and the U.S. government has not extended your visas to stay in the country as the conflict in Libya continues to rage. Where does that leave you and your fellow students?
It just leaves us puzzled. We don't know what to do. I mean, we were hoping that the U.S. would give it what they call temporary protection status, which would allow us to stay here till the situation is sorted in Libya. And that did not happen. We are trying to get the National Transitional Council to reinstate our program, but, you know, they're busy with other things, and we didn't know who to call. We called His Excellency, Mr. Ali Rojali, and we asked him to help us, and he said he would, but so far nothing happened. We've been without any source of income for the past 4 months.
Are you the only group of Libyan nationals in the U.S. right now in this situation?
We are the only group that we know of because we're like, and there is three other people from the same group but in a different university in D.C.
So my question then is, in terms of MSU and their attempts to help, or maybe insufficiently attempts to help, how have they responded? Do you feel that they have done enough to assist you as being former students?
Well, they tried to help. They provided us with housing and, you know, basic assistance just to help us, you know, buy food and the simple things that we need for our daily life. But after all, I mean, it's all about money. I mean, they helped us for 2 or 3 months, and then they said, you have to get on your own. We can't help you forever like that. And they were hoping that the situation will settle soon in Libya, but, you know, every time we say, like, you know, maybe something will happen, things will change. It never changes, and the war gets worse and worse, and we just couldn't go back.
As far as you and the majority of your fellow Libyan nationals here in the Lansing area, do most of you want to return home at some point, or are you hoping to permanently reside in the U.S.?
Well, almost everybody I know wants to go back home because, you know, we have families there. We had our lives there, and honestly, most of us, like, you know, if we stay here, we're going to start from scratch. For example, in my case, in Libya, I have a very nice apartment, and my family owns lots of properties in Libya. I have a car, and I was just telling the other day a reporter that I just bought my flat-screen TV, and I didn't have the time to enjoy it because I came here to this program. And I was planning to return, like, this year, but then this whole situation broke out, and you found yourself stuck. I mean, like...
So let me ask you, the situation that you're in terms of not being able to go home, what are the prospects then of that changing, and is it really just a matter of an embargo being lifted to allow you to go back home at this point?
Well, the thing is, so far there's a lot of random killing, and especially in the area of Tripoli, we have what we call the fifth column. Those are people who believe so much in Gaddafi for some reason, I don't know why, but they still would kill for him. And now those are the people causing problems in all the cities because they're like killing civilians randomly. And so, like, the country is not functioning so far. There's no police. There's no, like, regular army. It's just random people with guns. So as I told you, my brother carries a Kalashnikov now.
You know, we see what's happening in Iraq since, you know, the removal of Saddam Hussein, essentially this lawless environment, Al-Qaeda, suicide bombers blowing up, you know, public marketplaces. Is that possibly something that could also start occurring in Libya without a strong authority figure in place?
That's the worst case scenario, and that's what I fear the most. Because what I fear is, what if I go back now, for example, and stay in Tunisia and then into Libya, and then what? What if the situation got very bad? I will not be able to protect myself nor my wife. So I've worked for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees before coming here. So my job was to deal with refugees and see what they went through. And people suffered a lot. So I've seen a lot of suffering in my life. And I always thought, like, wow, how did these people get through it? And I don't want to see myself in a situation where I lose my wife. I can't even think about that. So even for me to return, I would just leave my wife here and go maybe and see what's the situation. But it's very complicated. I don't know what to do.
And the country's infrastructure, other than Tripoli, is there just a massive lack of infrastructure, and is it essentially a very high level of poverty then?
According to the World Economic Forum competitiveness reports, which issued in a yearly basis, we have the worst infrastructure in North Africa. So basically, the infrastructure is almost zero, and after this war, it became minus.
And how, I mean, when we look at the economy, I mean, it's essentially set now for a real downturn. I mean, if there's going to be really almost no security, any type of real economic foothold or growth, it seems like it would be almost completely unlikely.
Well, and that's another fact about Libya. The Libyan GDP is $60 billion per year. We have only a population of 6 million people. So if we have good management, we can, everybody in Libya can live a prosperous life. But the thing is, with Gaddafi regime, the money, even, for example, a few years ago, the income was $60 billion, and the government budget was $35 billion. So part of the money is taken and spent somewhere we don't know, and the rest is gone in corruption, because corruption is a very, very problematic thing in Libya.
When you see fundamental religious Muslim governments such as in Saudi Arabia and Iran, is that something that may sprout in Libya, or is that country not necessarily tilted in such a religious fashion?
Well, the thing is, we are moderate Muslims. We're not like so much into extremism, and we're not like atheists. We are Muslims, but we are moderate. We don't like going into extremes. But I told you the thing is, most of the Libyan people are civilians. They're not like people who would carry a gun and fight. So we fear that those people could, try to overtake power by guns, by weapons, because that's what they do. They fight. And that's what they did in Afghanistan, and that's what they were trying to do in Iraq. And the problem with those people that you cannot argue. So even if you try to argue with them, you just end up dead.
Do you think Libya would benefit from a bigger U.S. involvement at this point, or more international involvement, or is this something that should be dealt with within the country itself?
Now, I think the U.S. has done a great job in Libya because they left the Libyan people to fight on their own. I mean, yes, NATO was involved in protecting civilians from air, but still, the fighting was done by Libyans, so Libyans now feel so proud about what they did. Now, I think the most important thing is to unfroze the assets, because if people in Libya didn't see, difference immediately and didn't feel that the basic services are provided, then problems will start. And those extremists in general, any terrorist organization would use poverty to recruit people. So if we killed the ground for such things, then I don't think we would have a problem. And now there are for example, in the U.S. there are $33 billion of Libyan assets. And around the world there are $170 billion.
Well, the question though would be who to release those assets to at this point?
Well, at this point, everybody, most Libyans would agree to the National Transitional Council. Mustafa Abdeljalil is a very respected man and is loved by most of the population now. So we believe in him. And in addition to that, the Prime Minister, Dr. Mahmoud Jibril, is also a very trusted man, very educated man. And he was never involved in any corruption, and he worked even as a consultant to foreign companies. So he's quite an educated man, and, you know, he knows what he's doing.
Mohamed Jabril with the MSU, former MSU Libyan International Student Group. Now they are no longer with the university, and they're in limbo, and I wish you a lot of luck. Hopefully there will be some action taken by the U.S. government to at least give you some sense of where you stand and what your status is while you're in this country. Thank you for joining me, Mohammed.
And God bless America.